VorpalNetwork.com.
This episode of The Tome Show is brought to you by FRP Games, where you can find overstock discounts of up to 90% off of your gaming supplies. And listeners like you, thanks for using The Tome's Amazon store.
Hi there, this is Andy Collins. You're listening to The Tome Show. By recent declaration, I am now the Dungeons & Dragons Overgod, and I command you to listen and enjoy The Tome Show.
Welcome to The Tome, episode 139. The Tome is a D&D news, reviews, and interview show, and I'm your Tome host, Jeff Greiner. In this episode, we're going to find a guide to take us through the wiles of making a D&D character to make it all that it can be, as we look at the Player Strategy Guide. Later in this episode, I'm going to talk to one of the primary writers of this book, Andy Collins, as well as being one of the big three designers who helped create 4th edition D&D. Look in, on the inside cover of every D&D book you own. You'll see his name there. But right now, I'm joined by some very worthy guests. First of all, I'm going to introduce you to Tracy Hurley from the Sarah Dark Magic blog. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Also with us is Samuel Dillon from the RPG Musings website. How are you, sir?
I'm good. I'm glad to be here.
And this is your first episode, yes?
That is correct, and I'm extremely happy about it.
We're always excited to try out some new talent here. And we also have Jake Fitch, who is a fellow contributor over at the At Will blog.
Howdy, guys.
So those are the voices you're going to hear tonight. In other news, I don't want to take too long, but I did want to mention once again don't forget to check out my new project, which is appropriate to today's conversation. That is temporaryhitpoints.com. It's a new website dedicated just to the 4th edition D&D player. There's a new article at least every week, including one recently posted by this episode's very own Tracy Hurley. What did you write about, Tracy?
I wrote about crafting a character concept and trying to figure out how much information you should put into it and where to come up with a concept if you're just not having any luck.
Right on. And that's the first article in a planned monthly series, right, where you're going to look at how to help out the new D&D player?
Yes. We titled it The Player's Guide, and I'm there to help any new player. If you have questions, feel free to leave them in the comments, and I'll try to get to them.
Awesome. Also, don't forget that until the end of June 2010, in case you're listening to this from the future, I am giving away my copy of Amethyst that we reviewed a couple of episodes ago. If you head to VorpalNetwork.com and find the thread in the forums where you can tell me what you want the book for. What are you going to do with it? Why do you want to run something out of it? And then I'll put you in the running and you could win the book. That being said, I am not planning to ship outside of the U.S. My very first ever contest, I didn't realize that was going to be an issue and ended up spending quite a bit of extra money out of my own pocket to ship over to, I think it was Canada. So I'm sorry. I love my international listeners, but it's too much expense for me to ship things outside the U.S. If you win and you're outside the U.S. and you want to pay shipping, then that's perfectly acceptable to me. I've done that in the past, so... All right, today we're going to look at the Player Strategy Guide, which is a whole new sort of book from Wizards of the Coast. It's not focusing on giving new content, not like new classes or powers or feats or items or any of that kind of thing. What it does is it gives you advice on how to use the older content better. This is the sort of thing that previously you may have seen covered here and there in bits and pieces throughout Dragon Magazine articles, and it's still there to some degree. But this format allows it to go into a different level of depth and have a different style of coverage. So before we talk about that, though, I did want to mention our sponsor for the episode, FRP Games, where you can get all of your gaming purchases handled. My pick for this episode, appropriately, is the Player's Strategy Guide, the book that we are reviewing. Normally $30, it is only $24 from FRP Games, and of course you'll hear more about that book right after this word.
FRP Games is an online retailer specializing in all aspects of your tabletop gaming needs. Whether it's RPGs, dice, war games, or computer games, FRP Games has a wide selection of products. They offer overstock items where you can pick up all kinds of gaming gear ranging from 30% off all the way up to 90% off the retail price. Through our website, you'll be directed to their weekly new products, eBay auctions, or you can even buy your special gaming someone a gift certificate. FRP Games is an authorized Wizards of the Coast retailer and for 10 years has been committed to providing each customer with the highest standard of customer service possible. Visit our website for instant access to FRP Games inventory of thousands of unique gaming items.
Okay, now it's time to jump into our full-blown review and give you guys a chance to talk and I can stop dominating. Who wants to start off and tell us what they think about the Player Strategy Guide?
I actually really love the Player Strategy Guide. One of the big problems I had when I started a little over a year ago is that the other books don't have enough space to give examples of how the stuff's supposed to work. And if you read through the book as a player, you'll get real examples of how powers interact with each other as an individual and as a group. And then also DM should read it because it'll point out a lot of places where your players might be getting frustrated with the game and not understanding how 4th edition works versus some older editions or even just other games they may know.
Okay, good. Samuel, did you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I got to be honest and say when I first flipped through the book, there were several things that I actually wasn't too keen on. But I have to say that having actually read the whole thing now in depth and sort of played around with it and talked to my players and talked to some other people about it, it's actually grown on me quite a bit. And I agree with Tracy. I think that it's very much geared towards new players. And so I'm not sure that someone with a lot of experience would necessarily pick this up at first glance. But I actually do recommend it for pretty much everybody who's playing 4th edition right now.
Okay, Jake, your thoughts.
I agree. I would recommend anyone to actually at least read through it. I think there's lots of good advice, whether it's some tactical advice on how to play in combat or how to make your character or how to make your character gel with the rest of your group. And that's with background story and in combat itself. So there's a good, well-rounded book.
Okay, good. Now, when I started looking through the book, when I first got it, I sort of flipped through it like I often do when I get a new book, and I was very, very happy to see it and just couldn't wait to start diving into it and reading it and seeing what was there. On my second pass through, I was pulling out a lot of inspiration in the first chapter, which is about making your character. As I got out towards the end of that one and into the next couple of chapters, I actually started to hit a bit of a grind, I guess. Maybe this isn't the book to necessarily just pick up and read cover to cover. Maybe that was my issue. But I think what I also saw was, while the advice in there is phenomenal, it does seem very focused on crunch. Did anybody else notice that?
I do agree with you. I'm going to have to slightly disagree, though, because I think I had the same impression that it was mostly focused on crunch. But you know, when I really went through it in detail and sort of tried to go through and try to put myself in the position of someone who was maybe new to 4th edition reading this book and trying to figure out what I can pull away from it that's useful, it struck me that the whole introduction and the, you know, up through page 49 of the book basically emphasizes teamwork and how to work with your DM and the other players to generate a character and a party that's going to work for the game that's being run, and not just for any, you know, I mean, the advice works for any generic 4E campaign that you might be in, but it actually gives advice on how to talk to the rest of the people that are playing along with you in order to make the game better for everyone. And it wasn't just focused on maximizing mathematically, which is what I think my fear was, because I'm not a min-max player and I don't actually prefer having lots of min-max players in my game. And it was actually really refreshing to see a lot of the book devoted to the author saying, hey, look, you know, it may be, you know, you may spend all your time trying to make your character have the best two hit bonus, but, you know, or the best attack bonus, but that might not be the best thing for the campaign. So you really need to look at the whole big picture. So while it's full of crunch, I also think it's full of good information and good advice like that, that tells you to actually don't worry so much about the crunch all the time. There's other reasons to look at other things rather than just mathematical crunch.
Yeah. And I guess in fairness, the entire fourth chapter is about crafting stories and that kind of thing with your characters, which is really where I tend to focus as a player, is on the stories and then what mechanics can I use to help tell that story, which is where my concern was, is that I'm not sure that the rest of the book after, you know, before those, that last chapter really does. I mean, it kind of mentions it, but it really says the way to make your character is select these kinds of powers and fill these kinds of gaps. And it does talk a lot about teamwork, and you are right about that. But that was my one concern. I'm also very positive about the book. I just wanted to bring up that I did have that one concern. Jake, I think you had something to say about that.
Mostly you've covered it already. I think there's a good balance between. I think there's about an even distribution about, you know, there's the story stuff in the back of the book. There's a tactics section in the center of the book, but it doesn't take up a majority of the book, I don't think. And then there's the beginning intro section, which is basically how to build a character, how to make it interesting, not just, you know, tactically, but how do you make an interesting character that you want to play, that you can get into character with. So I think between all of it, I think the tactic stuff is actually almost a minority of the book, to my mind, because even throughout it, they have all those tell us about your character call outs through several of the pages that are all about a story that someone is telling about their character.
Yeah, let's talk about that. They did a series of sidebars throughout the books called Tell Us About Your Character, and it was just somebody who is a D&D player, some of them from, you know, Hollywood to some degree or another, and some of them in the industry or working at Wizards of the Coast. And it was just that person telling a story of, you know, a third of a page to a full page about their character, or in some cases, several of their characters. Did we like that? Was that useful?
I really liked it.
What did you like about it, Tracy?
Well, part of it kind of feels like getting a crash course in D&D. It's not that I just started playing 4th edition a year ago. I'd never played D&D until about a year ago. So hearing about other people's characters and how they liked playing, you know, a character that was probably unoptimized in the worst possible way, but still had fun with it, I think, you know, would help other players not worry about that part of character generation quite as much, where I think a lot of people coming new and particularly joining a group with people who've played before worry about it a ton.
I also liked the tell us about your character portions. I just thought it was a nice sort of takeaway from, you know, let's take a sidestep here real quick and let's just ask someone to tell us about their character. And a lot of them have a very different flavor, and not just because the character's a different class or race, but just because of it's in the person's own words. And I think this book is very collaborative, and so there are some parts that you can tell were written by different people, and it's a very, you know, it's sort of, there are a couple parts that seem piecemeal to me, but for the most part, they try to make it look like one cohesive tome that is very helpful and full of advice written by people of a like mind. But yet then you get this little sidebar of tell us about your character, and I think it's really interesting just to read, for me at least, about how someone sees their character, because I'm sure that there's probably a DM that was DMing that person in a game and didn't realize that that person thought that way about their character, or didn't realize that one thing about their character stuck out to them so much because maybe it wasn't emphasized in the game, or like Tracy said, maybe they weren't optimized, but yet it was the thing that was the most fun. And it's just really nice to hear that in someone's own words.
Yeah. And I found a lot of those pieces to be, so some of them were better than others, I think, was my take on the tell me about your characters. in that some of them I read and I was interested and I was learning things or I was being inspired by things and it was very cool. And others it was like, okay, and so what? You know, they never really had a point. They were just telling us about their character. You were laughing, Samuel. Is that something you experience as well?
It is something that I thought of, but I actually considered that a good thing because I felt like, well, there probably is some new player out there that might read this book and read one of those really long, elaborate ones and think, wow, I can't get into this character that much. And this doesn't seem like something I would be able to write. But then you go to one of the other sidebars and someone is just writing a, you know, two paragraph little description of their character. And so I think different people might identify with different portions. So while I did notice that and I thought the same way you did, I felt also maybe it was actually an advantage and not a disadvantage because there's a wide audience for this book.
Very cool. So Jake, did you take any of the quizzes?
I did take some of the quizzes. I found that the very first one, which is the what type of player you are, a very interesting. I mean, after taking the quiz, it pretty much confirmed what I knew, that I'm a power gamer and a thinker, and you know I already knew that, but I found that quiz out of all of them was the best, and that I would like to actually see that one expanded maybe and maybe put on the website and let people get more information like that.
Yeah. And for people who want to know what we're talking about here, there are a series of three or four like magazine style quizzes, right? Where there's a handful of 10 or so questions. And then your answers determine what kind of player you are, or maybe it's what race you are or class you are, that kind of thing. Did anybody else take the quizzes or take any of the quizzes?
Yeah, I did. I have a much less positive view of the quizzes maybe than either of you do. I found them kind of hokey and not instructive. And I really have a love-hate relationship with this book because there's a lot of it that I didn't really find matched my sort of demeanor and the way I do things, but I do find value in those for maybe other people and other, you know, targeted audiences. But I found the quizzes to be too much like a Cosmo magazine quiz, and it didn't really tell me anything I didn't already know. And so for me, I felt like, well, why did we spend, you know, six pages of this book doing these hokey little quizzes that weren't real instructive. But as you look at the whole book, it has sort of it tries to have a light tone. And I think maybe the quizzes do a lot towards adding to that light tone, but it's just not my style.
Tracy, quizzes, yay or nay?
I don't know. I felt a little constrained by them, but it was fun imagining characters who would answer certain ways.
Well, that's always the case with these kinds of quizzes, isn't it? You read the four options and you want there to be a fifth?
Exactly.
So that's always the way of the, even, even in the Cosmos, you know, all these quizzes or internet quizzes or whatever. You always are like, well, none of those really fit, do they?
None of them.
That's true.
I almost found it. I found them interesting. I found them cute. I didn't like write down answers, but I sort of skimmed through them and just sort of looked ahead at the end to see where I was leaning towards on a lot of them. I thought they were cute and they were fun. And I think the most value, if you want to have actual value in them, I think the first one, what kind of player are you, has the most value because that can actually inform your game. The rest of them don't have much value other than a few minutes of easy entertainment, I suppose. It almost would have been interesting if they were going to do a quiz thing like that. They only did it through like the first half of the first chapter. You know, maybe it would have been driven the point home, or maybe it would have just become tedious if they'd have done spread it out more throughout the book. You know, or maybe that would have just been way overdone and a waste of pages. I don't know. So any other last thoughts on the player strategy guide? It sounds like We think there's some good advice in there. I have some concerns that there's a focus on crunch over fluff, or at least mechanics over story, except for the last chapter. But honestly, that's also the area where I guess I have my greatest area of need. Like, on the one hand, I feel like it emphasizes crunch over fluff in three chapters. On the other hand, I probably personally need more help on crunch than I do on fluff, because the story parts come to me very naturally. So I have a similar sort of love-hate relationship as Samuel has.
Okay. I understand what you're saying, because it does focus heavily on the crunch. I think that's part of what would frustrate players the most coming to it as a new person. But on top of it, how do you teach the fluff part? How do you teach people to role play, given that how you would do that would vary greatly depending on your group and your DM and the story they're trying to tell?
Yeah, I think that there's some validity in that. Samuel, what were you going to say?
Well, I was going to say that that actually had like two very specific parts of the book that I liked a lot, and one of them is very crunchy and one of them is very not crunchy. And I agree with Tracy. I mean, the fluff, I'm sort of like you. The fluff comes to me very easily, and I consider myself a pretty good storyteller, and I can always add a lot of fluff, and I really get inspiration from reading different books and things. So that part comes sort of natural. It's the crunch that throws me. But probably part of that's because I don't enjoy reading about the crunch as much as the fluff. So that probably goes into it. But the two parts of the book that I really felt spoke to me the most were the hidden talents section on pages 16 and 17, where it went through every class, and it said, here's what makes this class unique. I really, really appreciated that section, because it, you know, one of the complaints I hear is, well, a lot of these classes are very, very similar. But, you know, my response is always, no, they all have a very unique thing. And here in this book, they actually stated what makes every class unique. And I just wanted to point the listeners to those two pages, because it's a really nice breakdown of what every class is going to offer in terms of uniqueness. And of course, you can always make your character as unique as you want it based on what powers and everything you choose. But just the class itself has a unique function. And then they give some pretty good advice on skill challenges on page 142. And they actually explicitly say something like, you know, ignore your skill list and just say what you do, which is something that, you know, a lot of DMs try to get their players to do, and it's really hard to get your players to do that. But here it is right in the strategy guide, actually telling the players, you know what, you're in a skill challenge, just say what your character is going to do. Don't look at your skill list. And I think that's a brilliant piece of advice, and I think it's something that needs to be highlighted. And that's sort of a fluff thing that sort of touches crunch, and the hidden talents part is a crunchy thing, and I think it sort of meshes those two together pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you mentioned the class section, and that made me think, you know, that I had some thoughts when I was reading through that, and that, like you, I was really impressed. I thought it was really cool to see that sort of delineated. I never really – like, I always knew the difference in terms of class features and that kind of stuff, but to understand on sort of this top-down look at each class conceptually and how they're different, I thought that was really useful. Although I did have the thought of, well, if they're listing all these classes and races and combinations and that kind of stuff, that does date the book. You know, there will be more players' handbooks with more classes, and there will be more races, and, you know, all these things will come out, and then suddenly this book will not be complete anymore. And I think while there's still a lot of value in this book for the next year or so, and probably beyond that, there is, I want to make it clear, there will be some sections that will be incomplete as of what the release of Dark Sun in a few months.
Sure.
Jake, your final thoughts?
Overall, I think the book is very good. My biggest complaint about it is that it's short. For $30, I kind of want something more than 160 pages. It seems like, and a lot of it, I mean, some of those, especially the stories, kind of seem like it was filler, like the quizzes they filled the story, they filled the pages with them rather than it being the best part of the book. But other than that, as the representative of the Power Gamers, I feel like I have to call out the chart on Focusing Fire on 105. That's just a great chart of why you need to focus your fire every time you're in a combat. But other than that, it's a great book. It just almost seems like it should have been maybe a paperback or something, though.
Okay, and I think that's fair. I think it does come off as a pretty light book, considering it's relatively similar in price to books that at least seem denser, or, you know.
I actually have a complaint sort of related to that. You know, this is a 160-page book, and chapter one is 79 pages long.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it has a layout problem. That was basically my biggest complaint in my first flip through of the book was this layout is horrible. The chapters should have been shorter, and the headings that I think were meant to make it more easy or make it easier for the reader to find layout just wasn't to my liking. They should have done it a little bit differently. I agree. It maybe should have been a soft cover book with a slightly different layout.
Okay, and I think that's fair. Although I do have to say that when I was reading through the first chapter, as much as it's a longer chapter and it's full of crunch and all those things, I had tons of inspiration. I had probably 10 different characters run through my head that I wanted to run out and hop on the character and build, you know, character builder and make right now. And that's sort of what mm-hmm. this book did to me, the first half of it anyway, as I went through that first chapter. But my favorite advice is the advice in the fourth chapter, because that's when it starts getting into the how do you use your character to tell a story and that's that kind of stuff. So I really like the fourth chapter myself as a favorite.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I think that's our thoughts on the Player Strategy Guide. I'm going to throw it over to the interview that I conducted with Andy Collins, who's one of the authors of the book. So, Jeff, take it away. I am here with game designer Andy Collins, whose name you might recognize from the cover of the Player Strategy Guide. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
And I think this is the second time. I think you might be one of the few or rare repeat visitors from Wizards of the Coast to come on the show.
Well, it's an honor.
And we're glad to have you. So we're talking about Player Strategy Guide today. As somebody who worked on the book and is very intimate from sort of a different angle than those of us reading it, what's your description of Player Strategy Guide? What is it?
Well, Player Strategy Guide is certainly a very different book than anything that Wizards has done to my memory, in that it is a book that is not about new mechanical or story-based elements for your campaign, but rather talking about the playing of Dungeons & Dragons, and more specifically, how players can play their characters more effectively, both from a mechanical standpoint, building your characters, playing them in combat, and also from a story-based and role-playing perspective, how you can get along better with the players in your group, with your Dungeon Master, that sort of thing. Unlike most of our books, it speaks to the players about this as a game. This is a game that you sit around and play with your friends rather than immersing you in either the fiction of the world or the rules of the game itself.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. So there's a lot of people that worked on the book. Sort of what is the process of putting a book like this together, since it's, like you mentioned, something unique and something that Wizards hasn't really done before?
Right. Well, I wish I could tell you that I remembered exactly how the idea came about, but odds are it was a few of us sitting around talking about what's something different that we could do in the schedule. We like to have a couple books a year that play around with different topics or different approaches or what have you, and this was one of those titles. So I have some memories of James Wyatt and I sitting around early on talking about what might be appropriate for this book, what are some different approaches we can take, whether that's with the type of writers to get working on it, the topics to cover, even the art style. Readers of the book will notice right away from the cover throughout the entire book, the art styles are not don't match anything that D&D has used in its other products. And that was very intentional. We wanted to send a message right from the get-go when you're picking this book up off the shelf that this is not like any other D&D book you have. So you've got the gorgeous cartoon-style cover illustration by Mike Krahulik of Penny Arcade, and that goes through all the various interior illustrations as well.
Good. And
Go ahead.
So what was the process like then to – I mean, there's a lot of writers as well that came in on this. Is it just, you know, giving assignments out to people and then sort of bringing it all together, or, you know, how does that all come together?
James Wyatt wrote the original outline for the book back at the start of the process, and we worked to line up freelance writers to fill out the bulk of the book, to write the chapters, essentially. And that's where Eitan, Tavis, Andy, Mike, Matt, and Steven came in and did the bulk of the heavy lifting on the writing. Along the way, we had the idea that wouldn't it be neat to get some more personal contributions from people both inside and outside the building, and that's where we came up with the tell us about your character sidebars that are littered throughout the book. Again, these were ways to break up the ongoing text sections and just provide some interesting insights into the play styles of various people. We were fortunate enough to get a number of D&D friendly celebrities to help us out with this one, including Will Wheaton, John Rogers, a couple of the guys from Robot Chicken, as well as many folks who work in and around the D&D brand and Wizards of the Coast in a variety of different positions. I think that really helped us get a wide range of perspectives, and I hope that the readers enjoyed getting some of those insights into the minds of the various people who work on the D&D brand.
Okay, great. So then what exactly – I mean, you mentioned all these people who came together and started filling in the gaps in the outline and turning those into articles and what have you. What was your role on the book?
I came in sort of at the second half of the book as it entered development and editing and helped bring the various sections together into a coherent whole. It's always a challenge when you have a lot of freelance writers to make sure that the final product feels like one book rather than half a dozen people talking in various directions. So that was a pretty key moment, and particularly in a book like this that needs to have a somewhat coherent narrative throughout it. It needs to have a voice that feels consistent from one section to the other. Sections need to talk to each other. If you mention a concept in character building, you have to make sure you treat it similarly when you're talking about building your party or playing good strategy in battle. So with the help of a couple of freelance editors, Gene Nelson and Brad Will, I oversaw that editing phase, which was much more significant than a typical RPG editing in that it involved a lot of sort of moving sections around and making sure that everything worked together as a whole. As an experimental book, we knew that we were sort of taking some chances with some of the content as far as, you know, is this all going to work? Is this going to read well? And there are places where we had to snip a little bit here, add a little bit there to make it, again, feel like a coherent whole.
Okay, good. So let's get into some of what's actually in the book. You've got essentially three chapters detailing different things that players might want to keep in mind or know about as they're playing the game.
And, of course, by three you mean four.
And of course, by three, I absolutely mean four, because who would say three when there's four? Right. No, but there's the one on the opening one, which in quite a bit of depth goes into building that character that as a strategy of how to put a character together. And then it talks about building your party, some tactics, and then dealing with the fourth chapter, dealing with sort of the some other ways to play the game, I guess.
Right. The the miscellany that goes into playing the game that goes beyond building the character and fighting combat. There, you know, certainly there are plenty of groups that play D&D as little more than a combat exercise, but there's really a lot more to it. And those decisions, whether it's, you know, how to work together to tell a good story, or more tactically knowing when your party should take a rest, those are also skills that mm-hmm. players can learn and master. And we wanted to at least give those a reasonable treatment to remind people that, yeah, there are some other sections. There are other skills to learn in this game.
All right. So of those four big sections, those four big topics, I guess, of tactics, of building a party, of building a character, and of the miscellaneous sort of stuff, which one of those is your favorite? Which chapter do you really Ooh. Like?
That's a very tough question. I worked on all of them pretty extensively. I think I like each of them for different reasons. The building your character I like because it's one of the first places that that any publisher of Dungeons & Dragons really came out and admitted, yeah, there are some smart ways to build characters to be effective and maybe some not-so-smart ways. I think historically the publishers of Dungeons & Dragons, whether that be TSR or Wizards of the Coast, have tended to let the players and the player community sort of write that commentary for itself. But with the rise of you know, hint guides for computer games and what have you, it's very much there's an aspect of that game that people want to learn, and they don't necessarily want to have to learn it purely by trial and error. Sometimes they like to read somebody's you know, insightful treatment of, okay, well, here's why I would want to play this class versus this other class. Here are the advantages of this race. This is why I'd want to match things together. I mean, this certainly isn't high-level optimization. We never wanted it to be that way. It's much more like sort of D&D 102. It's not quite your intro to Dungeons & Dragons game, but this is for the guy who's bought his player's handbook, he's read it, he's maybe played a character or two, but he's looking to take his game to the next level. So I liked working on that section and just being very honest with the player about, look, you know, if you're playing this kind of character, these are the kinds of things you're going to want to take. When you're looking at choosing your skills, here are the sorts of decisions you want to be making. We tried not to be – to sort of beat you over the head with it of, hey, dummy, this is the decision you have to make, but more introduce you to the questions you want to ask when you're making a character. And that's what differentiates it, I think, a bit from some of the very hardcore optimization guides, which can be very useful if you're looking for a very specific answer to something. But when you're still sort of learning how to ask the questions, I think this sort of an approach is a little friendlier. The building your party is something that that chapter is a topic that's relatively new to D&D. I think people have experienced players internalized that sort of party role dynamic, but it's frequently overlooked when people are putting together a campaign. And I think that while that's fine, you can certainly have a very entertaining game of D&D when everybody's playing rogues or what have you. You can have a much, I think, more fulfilling and rewarding experience if you take some time to think about what the other people are playing. And that goes even beyond mechanics, because it reminds you to think about the other players at the table for other reasons as well, right? Not just, well, is he playing a wizard or is he playing a fighter? But it reminds you to think about, well, what is that person bringing to the table? Not just their character, but their skills, their mentality, their interests, that sort of thing. Strategy and tactics, the third chapter, That was sort of one of the, I might say, the toughest chapter to work on, simply because it's the kind of thing that could easily spiral out of control and take over the entire book. Right? You could write reams and reams of material on how to play D&D well. So there, James and the other authors tried to focus on a limited number of key topics, and I think they chose pretty well. And in editing the book, I tried to make sure that those choices really came through strongly, thinking about how do you fight well in combat, how do you manage your healing, and then a little bit of sort of at the table dynamic of, well, what are good ways to organize my powers? I've played D&D before, but I'm new to 4th edition. All these power cards are freaking me out. Well, here's some ways that you can keep track of those things a little bit better. I think that chapter, maybe more than any of the others, could easily become an entire book of its own or an ongoing column series, that sort of thing. The fourth chapter is probably the one that will surprise the hardcore optimizer the most, because none of them think that those sections are the important part of the game. The most important part is, of course, building a perfect character and doing maximum damage every round. But really, the storytelling elements, how to deal with interpersonal issues, from the very simple to the very complex, how do you divide up treasure, right? I've heard that question at so many conventions over the years, where players who start playing the game, they understand the rules of the game, but then you get to those interpersonal elements, those metagame elements. Well, the end of the adventure, how do we decide who gets the treasure, right? Two characters want a magic sword. How do we split it up? That sort of thing. And we try to discuss some of the social contracts that go into D&D or other games of this style. And I hope that chapter proves useful to a lot of players who have maybe mastered the rules side of the game, but are struggling a little more with balancing the various players' interests and demands on the game, if that makes sense.
Sure. And it's one of the sections that I think has, if nothing else, it has a lot of staying power, you know?
Yeah.
It applies long down the road. You know, the first chapter that deals with building a character, I look at and say, okay, well, this is really good information, and every other page that I read, I want to run to my character builder and start putting together a new character. But at the same time, part of me is thinking, well, this is great now, but this long list of races and classes is going to be obsolete in a couple of years when there's new players' handbooks and what have you coming out.
Absolutely, yeah.
Go ahead.
That section on playing the game, I mean, that literally could have been written 10 years, 20 years, 30 years ago for the most part. I mean, there are some things there, I think, shared understandings of gameplay that have evolved over the years. I certainly think some of that advice has changed. There are things that people said about playing D&D when I started playing 20 years ago that we just don't do anymore. And we talk about that, for instance, in treasure and rewards, right? We talk about some other ways of splitting up treasure. And some of them are very old school, like, you know, high roll gets the loot or what have you, that many players today would just look at and go, are you crazy? How could that possibly be fun? So I think there are a lot of what we know about the right way to play D&D from a metagame perspective has evolved over the years as it's been influenced by changing player psychologies, by other games. People learn lessons from online games, from other role-playing games that get applied to how to play D&D right. And that's been very fascinating to think about.
Yeah, very cool. So there's a lot in the book and a lot of inspiration and ideas and tactics and what have you. But what isn't in the book that you think could have been? If you could go back and redo it or whatever, what is a section that maybe you'd want to add or a bit of advice or an article you could throw in there that didn't quite make the cut?
Well, certainly, I mean, we could have filled a book twice this size, particularly if we'd sort of had the confidence at the beginning that it was going to come out as strongly as it did. I'm pretty happy with the way the book came out at the end. But when we started out, we were sort of thinking, well, we haven't really done something like this before. Hope it comes out well. I think that the one thing that we talked about putting in but ultimately didn't have the space for was a little more of a how-to for the Dungeons & Dragons Insider character builder. I think right now that there's like one graphic left over, sort of a vestigial bit from that concept. The character builder is – it's a pretty strong user interface. It's reasonably intuitive, but there are things in there that are hidden that aren't obvious, and we thought that this might have been an opportunity for us to put in a sort of a mini user's guide, but fairly early on in the editing process, we realized that section just wasn't coming together like we wanted it to. It was also at risk of being even more dated than the character building section. So while I still think that would be a useful utility, putting it in a hardback book is not the right place for it. So we removed that section. It wasn't really finished as it was, so it wasn't too difficult to sort of fill that in with some other bits. I also think that the book could probably have done with a little more on that chapter 4 section, sort of how to play the game effectively. That advice that goes beyond the rule book. Again, it's tough to – you always have to face the tough prioritization of what's going to appeal to the most people, what's going to sell the most books, because you know, at the end of the day, it's about how many copies do you sell. I certainly think that if the book were 30 pages longer, I think I would have pushed for us to focus more on the areas of the game beyond the rules themselves. Mm-hmm. But given the space considerations we had and the priorities we had, I'm pretty happy with the distribution of the section. Certainly, building your character is the predominant section. It's over a third of the book, but I think that's the right amount for a book like this.
I know that's probably the advice I need. I'm really good at making a character that makes sense in the story in my head, but is totally unoptimized. You know, so this book helps me fill in a lot of those gaps. It helps me think of those things that may not be on the forefront of my mind.
Right. And we tried, even in that building a character section, to not ignore those important story elements. I think the best characters, in my experience, are the ones that excel in both of those areas. They are exciting and effective and fun to play mechanically, and they also contribute well to the story that the group is trying to tell. So we try to make sure that even that first section, which could have been a pure mechanical exercise, still talked about things like how to choose a background and alignment, talking about how to choose your class, both from a mechanical and a story-based perspective, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned something a second ago that made me think that traditionally, this is the kind of content that you would have expected to see in a series of articles in Dragon Magazine or the like. So why the decision to put together a hardback book that doesn't provide a lot of the things that you kind of typically expect from a new Wizards book, like new feats or class options and that kind of stuff? It's all just about playing the game with the rules that you already have. Why the decision to make this into a book instead of an extensive series of articles in Dragon?
Well, I think really we wanted to have it both ways. You see a number of sort of how to play the game articles that do run on DDI and other places. But we also know that despite the growing shift to a digital environment for hardcore gaming, there are an awful lot of people who still only get their D&D content from the bookstore or from Amazon in the form of printed ink on paper. So this was an attempt to reach some of that audience that wasn't coming to Insider regularly for their D&D fix. That was really the impetus for a book like that is like I say, reaching a slightly different audience and seeing sort of testing that water, seeing how much of an audience is there for a printed product like this.
Sure. And I think it came off pretty well so far. So what kind of person, as one of the people who worked on the book, what kind of person were you aiming for to buy this book? What was the target audience?
We were aiming for the player at your table who is a fairly regular player, but is not the sort of person that spends waking moments thinking about their characters. Right? Every group has a few of those people. Right? You've generally got one or two players who are always thinking about how to make their character better or how they could have fought that last fight more effectively. But then you've also got a mix of folks at the table who have fun playing the game and wouldn't mind if they could figure out some ways to play a little more effectively, but they're not going to track down optimization guides. Those sorts of things are overwhelming to them. They're not going to subscribe to D&D Insider and read advice columns on how to play. They think about D&D still as something in a book. So those are the players we were aiming at. There, I had a fun experience. The managing editor on this book, Tora Cottrell, came to me as she was working on the book, because I was turning over sections to her, and said, "This is the book for me." She had started playing within the last couple of years, but really enjoyed the game, knew she was still a relative newbie at the game, but wanted to get better. And she was overjoyed that we had written a book exactly for her. So that was an early reassurance that we had perhaps hit our target pretty well. That said, I think there's something in this book for pretty much every D&D player. I would have no problems handing this to any of the hardcore players in my groups and saying, "You might want to read chapter 3, or have you thought about thinking better about that last part of chapter 4, that sort of thing.
Okay, great. So just to give everybody a really good idea about what's in here, see if you can summarize the most important advice of this book in just a few sentences or less.
Well, I think the most important advice in this book comes on page 158, where it says, "Don't be a jerk." That no matter why you're coming to D&D, the key is you're going to be sitting there at the table with 3 to 6 other people who are all trying to enjoy themselves too. This applies to building your character, building the party, playing effectively at the table in a fight and outside a fight. The number one rule, don't be a jerk. Know that everybody is there for the same reason, to have fun, and it's your job to help facilitate that. Everybody at the table has that job. It's not just the DM. It's not just the player whose house you're playing at. Everybody's responsible for everybody else's fun. And that goes, like I say, no matter what part of the game you're talking about.
All right, great. Then any other last bits of advice you have for players before they head off into the worlds of fantasy?
I think perhaps the best advice is look for great inspirations for your character. Don't be afraid to paint in big, broad strokes. The most fun characters I've ever played weren't the subtle ones. They were the ones that went over the top in some area, whether it was a humorous stereotype or a funny voice or just a very memorable character inspiration. Find that inspiration for your character. Embrace it wholeheartedly and don't look back.
All right. Then that's where we'll head off for now, and thank you very much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thanks a lot, Jeff.
Okay, so that is episode 139. I want to say thank you to our sponsor, FRP Games, as well as Andy Collins for joining us in this episode. I wish him luck in the future. I also want to say thank you to our guest, Tracy Hurley. What do you want to pimp for this episode?
Well, I do have that article on temporary hit points, and I created that unofficial Monster Builder manual on my website.
Your website, which is sarahdarkmagic.com.
Yes.
And Samuel Dillon, otherwise known as DM Samuel, thank you for coming on the episode. What would you like to pimp today?
I would like to encourage everyone to just hop over to RPG Musings. I recently expanded and added a couple of contributors, so there's a slightly different flavor on the site than there has been for the past year, but I'm enjoying it quite a bit. And you can also follow me at DM Samuel on Twitter. And I follow all the cool RPG D&D people. So if you follow me in my list of people, you'll get some really great D&D conversations in there.
Yeah, we you're one
that includes all three of the people here today. I follow all of you, so
you are one of the I can always count on you being part of any D&D conversation happening on Twitter, it seems.
Yeah. I do work and have a job, though, really honest.
Sure. And Jake Fitch, where can we find you on the interweb these days?
You can find me posting at the 4eatwill.net blog, where I post as Melimbus. And you can also follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/MILAMBUS.
Fantastic. All right. And, of course, anybody can email me at thetomeshow@gmail.com or swing by the vorpalnetwork.com website and visit the forums. You can review the show on iTunes or tell people about it to help spread the word. And don't forget to consider checking out the Tome's Amazon store for products discussed on the show and more. The show gets part of the proceeds, and that helps keep us on the air. Links for things mentioned in the show can be found on the show notes on the website at thetomeshow.com. This is now the newly optimized and ready-to-tell great stories, episode 139, a review of Player Strategy Guide of...
I'm on the wall.